Greetings. Welcome to In Conversation with Trevor, brought to you by Heart and Soul Broadcasting Services. I go beyond the headlines and beyond the sensational. Today, I'm in conversation with biochemistry professor, Professor Christopher James Chetsanga. Enjoy this informative and inspirational conversation. Professor Christopher James Chetsanga, welcome to In Conversation with Trevor.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
What a pleasure, Prof. For me, this is a blessing having you here. And for me, this is also an opportunity to celebrate the person that you've been to us as a country, to your profession, to the profession of biochemistry. I must, as we start, say, when I came to the university in 1982, you might not have been aware of this, but I looked up to you, people like you, people like Professor Ngwabi Bebe, Professor Harry. You were an inspiration to us. So thank you so much for inspiring us, Prof.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
You've celebrated your 87th birthday. Actually, last month you celebrated 87. I must ask you this question. How do you manage to remain looking so energetic and dressing as smartly as you are? What's the secret to staying up to 87?
It is really, I have good friends. I have a good wife, and she feeds me well at home all the time. And I look at myself and really, I'm looking at society, things happening in society, this and that. And I keep that as something that is really for me to be a part of.
Mm.
And so this is how this has happened.
And I'm told you don't drink, Professor. You've never tested alcohol at all?
Not tested at all.
Yeah.
But I don't drink.
You don't drink?
No.
Wow. Awesome. What a blessing. Prof, you've done amazing things. And people might not know at home there that you discovered two enzymes which are involved in the repair of DNA damage. The first enzyme you discovered was in 1979. I can't pronounce the name. It's a long name. Formamidopramidine DNA glycosylase, which removed damaged 7-methylguanine from DNA. And then the other one was 1985, which is called DNA cyclase. Talk to us about that discovery, the process of that discovery, and the importance, the significance of that discovery.
Yes. When I was at University of Michigan, I was there for about 11 years. I went into research very, very seriously, very actively. And the question was, there are chemicals that cause cancer. If they get into a cell or they get into an animal, it causes cancer. And how does this happen? And this is the question I was asking. And then we found that these chemicals go into the DNA and cause a change in the structure of the base called guanine.
Mm.
And this then it goes to this N7 position of guanine. And when that happens, that DNA starts to break down. And so on, and this causes damage in the cell, and the human being, the cancer starts settling in, and so on. So I wanted to find out why, how this happens, the process. So I found that this when once this 7 methyl guanine gets onto the DNA,
mm-hmm.
the guanine itself has two rings on it.
Mm-hmm.
One ring is six sides. The other one is five.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the one that has these five rings that is called imidazole. And we can...
Mm-hmm. Is this what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Right.
This is the DNA.
Right.
And this is called adenine, this base. And this base is called guanine.
Mm-hmm.
This is called thymine.
Mm-hmm.
These two have one ring each. These two have two rings each. And these are called purines, mm-hmm. these two. These are called pyrimidines. Now, what happens is when this chemical gets to DNA, it binds to this N7 position here.
Right.
When it binds there, then this ring here opens up.
Mm-hmm.
This imidazole ring opens up.
Right.
And from that opening up, this is how this cancer system gets initiated and so on. So I looked for, did research for about 2 years
mm.
to find what enzyme is it that gets this off.
Mm.
And the enzyme is called the formamidopyrimidine DNA glycosylase. That enzyme cuts this off and it comes off and then repair brings a new base there.
I see.
So that repair.
And then the next one, the one we discovered in 1985, DNA cyclase?
That one, using ionizing radiation.
Mm-hmm.
You should have this, and then you express this ion radiation. It will open this ring, and it opens these rings, these two small rings, imidazole
right.
rings. And but after it does that, we started to find out why, what happens then?
Mm-hmm.
Does the cell just ignore it or what? And we found that there's an enzyme which is called a cyclase.
Mm-hmm.
It comes to rejoin mm-hmm. that breakage and the repair takes place.
Wow.
This imidazole ring has been repaired that way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, when you made this discovery, the news went world over that you had made this discovery. What have been the further developments after the discovery of this enzyme?
Well, this has been covered a lot globally.
Mm-hmm.
It's been cited globally because it's an area of cancer-causing chemicals
mm-hmm.
that we had found some answers to. And so people... the biochemists who are doing research in cancer were very much interested in this and followed this up. And I was invited in a number of scientific conferences to go and present papers on my findings.
Mm.
So it's been, and to the present day, this is cited by many of the scientists globally out. This process was discovered and so on.
And, yes. And we celebrate you for that. We're grateful for that discovery. Clearly, the entire humanity owes you gratitude for that discovery, Prof.
Yes.
And tell me, any benefits to you as a person, apart from the recognition as an academic, having made this discovery?
It's more that.
Okay.
People have said Chatsanga has discovered two enzymes that are involved in dealing with the repair and so on of cancer-causing damages and so on. And that's cited a lot. And so, yes.
So it's more of academic recognition
yes.
for you as an academic.
Yes.
Okay. You've continued, Prof, your research interests have really focused around, and I'm just going to go through these areas. Your research and writing interests have been around the RNA synthesis, studying the role of aflatoxins and hepatitis B virus in etiology and enzymology of DNA repair, and a lot of cancer research.
Yes.
Talk to me about, apart from the discovery of enzymes, what have been the other significant learnings that have come from your work? I mean, I was looking at your thick CV. You've done quite a lot of presentation and papers and so forth. For you, as you sit here at 87, what have been the big things, apart from the discovery of the enzyme, that have remained with you in your research and writings?
Well, I have trained a number of students.
Mm.
You know, I went to the U.S. in 1960,
mm-hmm.
and did a bachelor's degree at Pepperdine University in Los Angeles. And then from there, I got a scholarship from the Commonwealth and went to Canada, University of Toronto.
Yes.
Did my master's there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did my PhD there. And so this was studying the regulation of RNA synthesis. Mm-hmm. I covered in that. After that PhD in 1969, then I applied to Harvard University to go and do postdoctoral research. And I got a fellowship there to do this postdoctoral. It means the study that you do, the research that you did after you finished your doctoral degree, your PhD. So I spent 3 years at Harvard University. And I was doing that research. And I was also assisting in lecturing to students during those 3 years. And it was after that that I went to the University of Michigan in 1972. I was at the University of Michigan from 1972 to 1983. And I have to tell you an interesting story.
Sure, absolutely.
When I was there, that's where I did this research, these enzymes and whatnot. And a number of students did master's and PhD degrees in my lab. And so it was...
You were supervising.
Supervising them.
Yes.
Yes. Now, then, you know, Zimbabwe got independence in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1982, Professor Kamba, who was the vice chancellor at UZ, contacted me, says, Chris, come back home. we need you. Zimbabwe is a free country now, and we want you back. We want to give you some work to do at home now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I applied to the president at the University of Michigan to say I want to resign. I want to go back to my country, where I came from. The president was unhappy for me to want to leave.
Mm.
They had seen all these contributions I had made, and this was very good for the name of the university and so on. So he says, no, you know, many of other African lecturers we have had here, they come. They ask to leave and they go back to Africa. In 2 years, they come back. They ask to come back. they don't find it as rewarding to go back to study, to do research there. So I said, I really would like to go and test this. So we made a second meeting. He says, okay, I will say, you go back, I'll give you 5 years leave from this university, and you go there. And after 5 years, if you find that systems are not good for you there, you come back, your position will be still available.
Wow.
So, when I came to Zimbabwe, joined the University of Zimbabwe, and something quite, I at the University of Michigan, I started there as assistant professor. And then I was promoted to associate professor.
And then I was promoted
finally
full professor.
Full professor.
1979, 1983.
Yes. So then when I came to Zimbabwe, they said you appoint me as a senior lecturer
in biology.
In biochemistry. I was quite upset.
Why?
The reason Professor Kamba told me, said at the University of Zimbabwe, each department will give it only one professor. We don't give more than one professor in the department. So I said, can I see the, you know, this CV of the present
professor
in biochemistry?
Yeah.
And we looked at it and I compared with mine. I had published much more than he had done. So I said, so you don't look at my publications at all. You just look that there's already one professor in there. So anyway, I was determined to come back home. So I accepted that. And after 1 year, they promoted me to professor.
Professor.
And they said, we have to change the system. I said, globally, there's no university that has one professor in a department. Become a professor by what research you have done. That contribution is what puts you into that position. I said, this man, it was a white man from UK, who is now the professor there, he has not done it, hardly, he's done half
the research that I've done.
So what does this mean? And I said, globally, this is not done.
But you wanted to come back, so you wanted to come back home so much that you essentially accepted a demotion problem.
Yes, I did. But then I came in 1993. Sorry,
1983.
And then in 1985, they made me professor.
Professor, yeah.
And then they went into the regulations of the university and amended it to say, we allow people, departments to have more than one professor, depending on the research contributions the people have made.
Now, when you look back at the time that you spent at the University of Zimbabwe, what are the things that stand out for you? You come in, you've done this amazing research, you eventually make people like Professor Walter Kamba change the way that the university was run. When you look back, what stands out for you? I mean, for me, the University of Zimbabwe was an institution that we're so proud of because of people like you. Academics who had achieved quite a lot worldwide coming back home. When you look back now, what goes through your mind?
Well, they made me professor.
Yeah.
Right? And in 3 years, I was made chairman of the department. And after 5 years, they made me dean of the Faculty of Science. So this was quite positions. And then they made me pro-vice chancellor. And
1987?
Yeah. And then Kamba asked me to be an acting vice chancellor when he was taking off for a couple of years. And so I acted as acting vice chancellor.
Mm. Mm.
So, but in the University of Zimbabwe at that time had research money.
Yes.
In the government each year gave them a research fund, and all the lecturers and so forth would apply for grants from that money. But today it's not done anymore.
There isn't research money.
And the young, the lecturers are complaining, and there's no research money available.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, Prof, in 1993, you were appointed Director General of the Scientific Industrial Research and Development Center. When that appointment happened, a lot of us were excited because we thought, wow, this is going to be huge. Government is giving priority to science, to research. We're going to see more investment going into research. We're going to see Zimbabwe being on the cutting edge of scientific research and that kind of stuff. Talk to me about your expectations, what transpired, and the status of the institute at the moment.
Yes, thank you. Yes, in 1993, President Mugabe said, we want to remove you from UZ. We want you to start a new institute in Zimbabwe called the Scientific and the Industrial Research and Development Center. And in Headcliff.
Mm-hmm.
That's on the road to Goromonzi there. We want you to study that. We want our country to go into research to help our industries to do research, to come with products that can become products that are produced by industries and they can be exported and improves the economy of Zimbabwe. So I said, no, I'm very happy to do that. I'll do so. You know, when I started, something quite interesting. Then you said Professor Kamba had come off from being vice chancellor. And President Mugabe sent Minister Chombo to come and talk to me. Said, we want Professor Chitsanga to take over from, take over UZ as vice chancellor. And so I said to Chombo, the president just assigned me to be start this new one, and it's something that I think is more important for me to engage in than to head the university. Heading the university is also a good assignment, but I prefer this one because I think it will make contribution to industrialization of our country and so on. So he went and told the president Mugabe. That first time, Mugabe said, no, go and talk to him again. we want him to be the vice chancellor of UZ. Chombo came again, and I said, please, tell him I'm not despising him and whatnot. It's just, I feel this is an area of research that I have more talent and experience for. I can make a contribution. So like, then it ended there. And so I started to set up the SRDC as a center with 8 institutes. Those were the Biotechnology Research Institute, the Building Technology Research Institute, the Energy Technology Research Institute, Environment and Remote Sensing Institute, Food and Biomedical Research Institute, the Informatics and Electronics Institute, the Production Engineering Institute, and the National Metrology Institute. Those eight, each one, I appointed a director, and usually it was somebody with a master's or PhD, and under him, in his institute, you would have either 10 up to 20 scientists working on assignments that we agreed on. And this we did this for all these institutes. And it did quite well. To start opening up, we got money to start building and so on. And when we opened up, we asked the team from Malaysia, because they have a number of these institutes in Malaysia. I wanted them to come and help us to launch this so that we can use their experience and so on. So they came and they were with us for a month. And so I felt so good. So I was doing this for 10 years. And after that, I left and went back to UZ. He's a professor of biochemistry.
So what's the position now with the center? Is the center still there?
It is there. It's acting. It's got a professor, Mafuti, who is heading it.
Okay.
But he told me recently that they are not getting enough money to the projects that are required, that need for industry.
Tell me your own assessment, or the 10 years that you were there, what impact do you think the center had in those eight areas that you've outlined? Were you impactful? Did you have the money to do the research that was required?
During that first 10 years, we had money.
Okay.
And we developed, for example, in biochemistry, we developed a maize variety that can grow in an environment that does not need too much rain.
Okay.
And there were about five projects that were done in five institutes that went to industry.
Apart from the maize one, is there another two or so that you remember that stand out? Please, let's go through them if you may.
There was one that we did to develop a housing support, housing components that built with this approach. It was not as expensive as the other way.
Okay.
And so that was taken. And then the one of the projects that got us interested in industry was to come up with them. We're going to start to do a tractor. So when I left, they didn't continue the project. But the technology we had, and we had contacts that could do this. Right. And I'll tell you, the Malaysians,
yes,
they've done wonders. You know, they've done industrialization in Malaysia. It's a population of 30 million people in Malaysia. There was a time that President Mugabe was invited, and he took me along. The Prime Minister there opened the meeting and said, "Folks, we are glad you've come. Malaysia, we now have 30 million people, and we started the industrialization about 10 years ago, and we are at a point now. There's no one who is who is unemployed. Mm. Of these 30 million people, everybody who needs a job has got a job. And this has actually come to a point where we are importing labor force because we don't have enough people.
So you, it's interesting, Prof, because you're speaking highly of the industrialization in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. But what about us? With a center like the one that you're running, how come our industrialization levels does not compare to Malaysia? What's your explanation to that?
The funding is low.
Okay.
It's low funding. Malaysia, for example, they were assigned to start a car. And they developed a car called a Proton.
Yeah.
And they were assigned to a period of 4 years. And in 3 years, the car was up.
I visited Malaysia.
Yeah.
And I went to the Proton factory.
Yes.
And you know one thing that the staff and management, they were proud of is that their president made it his duty to almost be there on a daily basis, to look at the car, the way it was developed, to have suggestions and so forth. So the president had an interest in the development of the Proton, which Zimbabwe started exporting. Our leaders that invested in ensuring that our scientists such as yourself contribute to the industrialization of Zimbabwe.
We could do it.
Mm.
Yeah. There are a number of things where our leaders go wrong.
Yeah.
For example, you know, you hear that the exchange rate for the US dollar. There's a rate in the banks. There's a rate on what do you call it?
On the streets, black market.
Black market. Yeah, about three
exchange rates.
Now it's not fair for the country. And you go to Europe, every country has one exchange rate. To have these exchange rates more than one. It doesn't help anybody. For example, when you go to the black market, it's the highest.
Mm.
Who is benefiting from that?
Mm.
You know?
Who do you think is benefiting, Prof?
Well, I hear now that some of the leaders are behind that and they are benefiting.
Mm. Yeah. Going back to your area, Prof, what is it apart from funding that needs to be done to incentivize our scientists to come back home, to contribute to the development of Zimbabwe and indeed the continent? Because when COVID hit us, it became so obvious that Africans are not on the cutting edge as far as research, manufacturing of medicines and so forth is concerned. What is it that you think we need to do?
When COVID came,
yes, sir.
It had started in China, and I talked to some of the Ministry of Health people, staff with the minister, to say let's send about five people to where the vaccine has been developed, so that we can train our people in developing vaccines against a given disease that has come, and particularly now this COVID-19. They didn't send it. Look, the Chinese and the Malaysians and the Japanese, you know, they have not developed car from scratch.
Mm.
They were developed in Germany and in America. But they sent students over there to learn these techniques.
Mm.
And, you know, when I was teaching at the University of Michigan, there were a number of Chinese and Japanese students coming. And when they get their degrees,
they send back
home? They go back. And Japan is one country. It has no natural resources like gold or anything, metal and what. I was visiting there, I think now 6 years ago, the scientific meeting, which was there. And the guy who was the host of the meeting, one day he invited me to his office, and we were sitting in his office. He says, "Oh, I want you to look through the window. You see that car there?
Mm-hmm.
That's a Toyota car." He says, "Every part is from Africa. Every part that is on that car." He says, "Here in Japan, we don't have any of those raw materials."
Mm, the raw materials.
Yeah. He says, "So we are very glad that Africa doesn't compete in making cars, because they would benefit greater than we would."
So why don't you and I have touched on the Malaysian model.
Yeah.
There is a Singapore model.
Yes.
I mean, the president of Singapore, again, they don't have minerals the resources that we have.
Yes.
But the Singapore model was, let's send out students all over the world to study and come back home. Why don't we do that as Zimbabwe, yeah. Prof? Can you answer me? Exactly. Why don't we do that?
Exactly. We don't have that brilliance. We don't.
Does it require because
all these things, if we send students and assign them these assignments to these countries that are advanced, they come back home with the technology. And if they come home now, we fund them to
start their own things.
Yes.
But we're finding, Prof, that right now, as I'm talking to you, we have graduates that are training to become nurses so that they get visas to go and be nurses outside. These are qualified people. Our young people are leaving this country because we have educated them, but the economy is so bad that they'd rather train as nurses to get a visa to be a nurse aide in the UK. I mean, what is that?
Well, you don't blame them. The salaries here are bad. The salaries here are bad. And they are, what they are saying, the salaries are bad, they mean it.
Mm.
Their friends who are there, and they are telling, those friends are telling them how much they are making. And
they can't make ends meet.
Yeah.
They can't raise families.
No. Yeah. And no, you are right. As we speak, you know, they say we have 90% unemployment in Zimbabwe. 90% unemployment.
So, Prof, you took a demotion to come from Michigan to work for this country, the country that we love so much. When you look back at that decision that you made, do you have any regrets at all?
Not really.
But
sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. The way I have this is poor funding.
Mm.
You know, Mnangagwa buys 1,000 buses. And, you know, those buses. But he doesn't give research money to universities. The focus to fund research is very important for a country. You see, the Asian countries learned that earlier on. And Japan today, they say, is the leading car producer. And they don't have iron and steel products there, but they are importing them. And here, what do? We get minerals, iron from a mine, take it to the airport, ship it to Japan. When it goes there, they take it straight into a factory, and there people get jobs. One. And two, in that factory, they produce finished products and they export it.
Well, what's, Prof, I mean, what's wrong with us? Why doesn't our leadership realize that is wrong? It's been wrong for 400 years. Why has nothing been done? For me, it's a puzzle. It's so simple. Why not invest money in science and research, in education, in medicine and that kind of stuff, so that your people, the economy grows, your people get jobs, and you get re-elected and re-elected. Why doesn't somebody get that?
No, you can't. You can't convince them.
Why? Why, Prof?
I just don't. For example, the time we had started a symposium where all the universities would send people to one university that would be hosted that year, and the people to show their products and so on, and the industry of it, this would also be invited, and they see if their product they can want to go to and produce, and so on. Then you remember that just before Mugabe left office, he had started the system. He would say, "We are inviting people to come and invest. We would like very much for them to come." But in each company that comes will own 51% of it, and the investor will own 49% of it. Nobody came. Nobody came.
Why?
It's his money. We didn't put any money in that. No one came. And so today, the reason we have this 90% unemployment is that there are no industries that could have been established if we had had an attractive policy for inviting
investment
them.
Policy.
Yeah. You see, it's you know, we had our graduation at Zegul last week, and each time I see them students being kept and so forth, it's just, what is the student going to do? Where are they going? There was a time I was chairman of Zimche. This part, Zimbabwe Institute for Research, promoting. It supervises all universities. One time, a mother phoned me from Chitungwiza. Says, "Yeah, Zimche." I said, "Yes, madam." Says, "I have a son here. His father died 8 years ago. I was left to look after him by putting through primary education and secondary education. And then I put him through university and borrowed money. And he finished his degree 2 years ago. And up to now, he can't get a job." He says, "Because I come from Sireko Manongo." Got it, Mama. You see, so. Assignment in the Okofundi Savana Chit and they could wrap up my jobs, grammar jobs.
To her point, Professor, do you think our education is relevant to industry? Is our education relevant to our economic ambitions?
It can be made to,
but it's not.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's not. No, it's you know, I have friends in Asia that where they've gone through these experiences, and when I was running SRDC, I used to bring a team of two a year just to see how far we've gone and for them to share their experiences with us and so on. And it's there, the government really set money for research.
So are you saying, Prof, were you not able to persuade the government to continue making investment into research.
Yes.
You failed.
Yes. It didn't just persuade them.
Mm.
Then you say, where are we going?
Mm.
Like at the moment, we are graduating as they say about 20,000 students from these
universities,
25 universities, and none of them gets a job.
Imagine getting free access to the Newsday, the Standard, the Zimbabwe Independent, and the Weekly Digest for a full month. Well, you can, and all you need to do is download the Newsday e-reader app on Google Play Store or scan the Newsday QR code in any of the AMH print publications and start enjoying the quality content. Usasaririrewe, famba ne time, famba ne chokwadi, famba ne e-paper.
So, Prof, I want to push you back on this point where you're saying we're producing 20,000 students from university. But what if I said, but why can't these 20,000 students that are being produced create jobs? Why can't they contribute to the economy? What's your pushback on that?
The syllabus that that we use for them, for most of these, first, one bunch of them are from the arts subjects, so they couldn't get into that. But the others that are taking engineering, taking chemistry, taking this, there's not real industrialization component in there that gives them that gives them the armor.
And yet at Independence, Prof, we were producing fitters and tenors and plumbers and engineers and so forth. ZESA engineers are in South Africa running Eskom and so forth. And yet we came in and destroyed all that. Did we? Am I right or am I wrong?
The Smith days, they've done more industrialization than is there now. But we didn't set up a system that promotes that. It's just, we are not quite bright enough in this direction.
And yet we are blessed with so many resources, Prof.
Indeed, and our people are good people.
Yes.
Even just the social being. Mozambique will fight. You don't hear Zimbabweans fighting here and so on. And even in school, they do so well. When I lecture students, I was lecturing to science students in the US for the 12 years I was lecturing for University of Michigan. And the performance, those students, maybe there would be just 10 black students, but 100 white students. So the performance of the students I'm teaching here and what those white students were doing, the ability is the same. The mental is the same. It's just we do not have this orientation. We want to industrialize.
Mm. Yeah. The government is not creating an enabling environment. For us to be able to industrialize.
Yeah. I'll give you here.
Absolutely.
I've written two books. One is a dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
English Journal Science and Technology Dictionary.
Wow.
Then this one came out last year.
Mm-hmm.
Africa Industrializing 4. economic mm-hmm. prosperity.
Mm.
I am very much worried by not industrializing Tikamuno, because when I do, Tinoasirachi, Muswandi no fine, not Valango Asaran, the Chinchit.
And what breaks my heart, Prof, is that we are not taking advantage of your intellect. We're not taking advantage of this academic prowess that saw you discover two enzymes, which could be propelling this nation into something else. We're not tapping into people like you.
Yeah. No, we are not right.
Mm. Prof, the let me take you. So you said something which is big for me there, Prof. You said, when I die, what will I say to our children? That's essentially what you said. As you sit here, what is the one thing, when you go to your grave, you regret about where we are?
The one I regret about is that there's no prosperity existing in our country. This 90% unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you saying?
Mm-hmm.
10% are employed, 90% unemployed. What do you say you have done?
Mm-hmm.
Eh? Mm-hmm. What contribution and item in educating these children? What has been achieved?
Wow, that's and for me, as you're talking, I'm like, what is our president thinking when he's sitting in his office and his people, there's 95% of Zimbabweans who are unemployed, who we have spent taxpayers' money educating? What does the president think about that?
This area of the use of money in research. And you can say to people, we are giving this money, we want the research in such an area. Those who want to do that, apply for it.
We had on this show, Prof, a young man who is with Pfizer, educated here, left, going to Germany, and he's been one of the people that has worked in the forefront of the manufacture of vaccines with Pfizer.
Mm.
We've got the brains, we are not creating a home to make those brains come home and work here.
Yeah.
That breaks my heart.
These people are in a good diaspora. A lot of them could divert. If we have a system to bring them back, those are good for Kunana, Japan. When
they come back. But we are scared of the people in the diaspora because of political issues. If they come back, they won't vote for us. Anyway, Prof, what a blessing. I'm blessed to be talking to you. You were born in 1935.
Yes.
Kumrewa.
Yes.
Talk to me about your upbringing. You then went to Tegwane. Tegwane was one of those institutions of learning, which was very highly respected in Plumtree in 1957.
Yes.
How was that upbringing like?
Well, okay. Kumrewa, my home.
Mm-hmm.
I first did primary education to Noa Mission,
mm-hmm.
and then I went to Old Mtare, Vatsel Secondary School,
mm-hmm.
to get a junior certificate. Eco.
Another very good school, Hatsel.
Yeah. But then, the schools then, there were very few schools around. Tegwane was the only one I could find a place to do matriculation. So, Plumtree, that way, No, they were that ones I could go, but they were Ziwarongo. Mm. Most of the secondary schools in the cities were Ziwarongo shed.
Mm. Anyway, so you went to Tegwani?
So I went to Tegwani. After Tegwani, I went back to Noah Mission as a teacher. Mm-hmm. I had finished matriculation. So with the matriculation, you know, it's a South African
system. Yeah.
Yeah, now able to go to university with that certificate. Now, at Noah Mission, the principal, one of the missionaries, said to me, would you be interested for us to send you to America to go and do degree studies? Oh, we really welcomed that.
Wow.
And so they sent me to Pepperdine University in Los Angeles.
California.
Yeah, California, mm-hmm. Which was very good. I could honor it.
Yes, that's the beauty about California, isn't it?
But then I got applied for Commonwealth Scholarship. And so I got it to go to Canada, University of Toronto.
That's where you got your PhD, eh?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And then from that, I went to Harvard University to do PhD. You see, when in America, we thought, if you just have a PhD, you don't get teaching jobs. You have to do postdoctoral.
Yeah. And then you went, which is what you did at Harvard.
And then after that, I got a job at University of Michigan. Mm.
So your entire life has been in academia?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
You are now at the Ezekiel Guti Zimbabwe University as Vice Chancellor. You've been there since 2019?
Yes.
How many students do you have?
Right now it's 2,000 students.
Okay.
Mr. Guti, you know, Archbishop,
sent
a team to come and talk to me at Ezekiel Guti. We are looking for somebody with experience to come and lead our university. Mm. So that's how.
But I would have thought that at 87, you'd be retired, but you're still working.
I'm still working.
Why?
If I stop working, what do I do?
You write books.
That's what my son is saying to me.
Yes. So your son and I agreed. You need to be home. You're 87 years old.
No,
87 years young. You should be home and writing books and taking care of Azukuru. Why not?
My son is a pilot for Emirates.
Right.
And he flies here often. And that's what he says.
And what do you say?
And he says, Baba, if you stop working now, because the car that I use belongs to the university. Mm. And my driver here belongs to the university. And my son says, Baba, we want you to stop. You are old enough to stop. And if you stop, I'll buy you a car.
And you've got a car already. Right. But seriously, Prof, I mean, why don't you stay home, write books?
We want
more books from the professor.
My son wants me to write a biography.
Indeed.
He wants me to write a biography.
I support your son. So how are you going to push back on that? We want a biography from Professor Chitanga.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking that in another couple of years or so, I want to expand my contract.
You'll sit down and write your biography.
Yeah.
Wow. Prof, it's been so beautiful talking to you. And I'm delighted that are you leaving this for me with me? Or can I buy it off you? Those two, can I buy them off you?
This, yes.
I can buy this?
But
this one?
This one, I have only one. But you can buy this in It's published by...
This is a very important college press. This is a very important one. English Shona Science and Technology Dictionary. It's a very important one. So I can go and buy this in the shop. Fantastic. Prof, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Coming through.
Thank you.
What a pleasure. What a blessing talking to you, Prof.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. You are a national treasure. We ought to be proud of you. You know, for me, as I was preparing this, Prof, I say to myself, Professor Chitsanga is one of those people that should be honored by being given a national award.
And I was given an award last year.
What was it called?
Among the academics.
Absolutely. Well deserved.
Yeah.
Allow me to sit there and allow me to focus on our viewers who are all over the world, Prof, who've been watching us. To say thank you for your support. Remember, we are a weekly show. We are out every Monday on YouTube at 7 a.m. Central African time. To ensure that you don't miss out on any of these quality conversations, I invite you to click on this subscribe button. You can also go to our website. We've created a website for you. Remember to like, to share, and to subscribe. We also have podcasts for each of these conversations that we have on all the major podcast platforms, plus on our website. We do have those podcasts for your listening pleasure. Until next time, thank you so much for your support. Cheers.